This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, a thank you note stirs up controversy in black roles and the Oscars. Joining me today to discuss these topics and more from our Washington, D.C. headquarters, Republican strategist Tara Setmeyer. Walter Field, CEO and publisher of the NorthStarNetwork.com, joins us from our New York bureau. And from Maryland today, George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Let me start with a note that's stirring up some controversy, as we just said. This was, well, we discovered it first in a radio broadcast this week when we heard from a Christian conservative, James Dobson, who suggested he received a thank you note from Samuel Alito after Alito sat his first week on the court. And it suggested that he was thanking Mr. Dobson for his support and pledging that, and this is a quote, "As long as I serve on the Supreme Court, I will keep in mind the trust that has been placed in me," end quote. There are so many people suggesting that this may be a wink and a nod saying, I've got you covered. Others suggesting that this is Mr. Alito just doing the right thing by thanking someone who helped him out.
Yeah, I think the people on the left who are experiencing sour grapes because Alito was in fact nominated and confirmed through the stipulations in accordance with the U.S. Constitution, they're upset because he's a conservative and he's thanking his supporters. I mean, there are over 3 million Christian conservatives out there who supported this nominee, and it was a very benign in nature. The wording was only two paragraphs long. It's just another attempt by the left to undermine Alito's position on the court. I mean, we don't get into this discussion when we talk about what about George Washington's letter of thank you to the Hebrew congregation or Thomas Jefferson's letter of thank you to the Danbury Baptists, where he was thanking them for praying for him. So, you know, we have a history in this country of being accepting and thanking groups who support us. And I think that they're just being the other side is being alarmist.
George Curry, much ado about nothing.
Well, I mean, first of all, on the court, he has to serve more than his former supporters. He has to serve everybody. I think he recognizes that. I'm not upset about this if it is as has been represented. That is, he got a letter from Jim Dobson, and in return, he sent a thank you note saying he's going to, you know, not forget the trust that's been placed with him. To me, it's a pretty perfunctory letter. I don't read no more into it.
Walter?
Well, I think on face value, it seems innocent, but I think we have to have a correct historical record here. You know, those incidents mentioned by Tara, we had elected officials who responded to the electorate. Here you have a sitting member of the United States Supreme Court, and what people are concerned about, and I think people on the right are also concerned about the blurring line between church and state. The Supreme Court is the ultimate body that decides the law, the sanctity of the United States Constitution. You would hope that there would be some objectivity on the part of sitting justices. So I think the real concern becomes when opinions are made on the high court, whether or not they're being influenced by certain segments of America that may have overdue influence on a member. So I think, you know, we can take a look at this note and just say, yeah, well, you know, it's a nice note that James Dobson sent the justice. But given all that is occurring in the country today and the bleeding of religion into politics, I am a little concerned about the note.
But that's not the way of Washington, though. I mean, that's what you got to realize. I mean, I get Christmas cards every year from George Bush. Does that mean that I'm his big fan? Absolutely not. And so, I mean, so these perfunctory letters go out all the time, and I'm just unwilling to, based on this alone, read any more into it.
The difference, George, though, is that you're not sitting on the United States Supreme Court and making those critical decisions. I also get Christmas cards, too. And I'm not making any decisions that are impacting lives are going to have a long-term
impact. Let's make sure that we don't mix the message here. And, Tara, I'll let you get in,
I promise,
right after this. But I just want to make sure that we're not mixing the message. This is not received from Dobson to Alito. This is Alito sending a quick note saying thank you. It's not the other
after
way around.
After he had received a letter, though, Ed, it's important
yes,
to put
but
it
still the
context.
Common courtesy of the return is what people are concerned about. It wasn't that he received anything. Go ahead,
Well, that's the point here. It's the it's common courtesy. And as George stated, that's the way things work in this town. But just because you're a sitting justice on the Supreme Court doesn't mean that you are precluded from having some basis in religious belief. I believe that the First Amendment applies to Supreme Court justices as well. So I think it's unfair to say that because Justice Alito has expressed a certain religious viewpoint, or that he believes in certain Christian values, that does not preclude him from being objective in other cases.
And I didn't say
here's
that.
The other end of it. Here's the other end of it, guys. And we also know how this town works. And you also understand that everything is under a political microscope. And if, in fact, and we know how charting people are in terms of their movement. So one has to think Judge Alito may have, based on Mr. Dobson's proclivity to tell things publicly, may have known that this was going to get out.
Well, in my mind, it is a question of appearance. It's not a question of whether or not Judge Alito can certainly practice his religious beliefs. It's a question of appearance. And Supreme Court justices, no matter what political spectrum they have come from, have always been very careful about public persona and the messages that they send out. Right. And clearly, this is a message that, because it's a note transmitted to someone who is seen as a leader of a conservative movement, could send, you know, a subliminal message to people that, yes, wink and a nod, don't worry, your issues are okay with me. That's my concern. It's a matter of appearances.
All right, let me move us to something that is dividing actually not just the right and the left, but the right. The Senate began work on legislation this week to overhaul the nation's immigration laws. We have been hearing about this for some time, the concern about the borders, and there is a bipartisan push led with the White House for this new guest worker program. But some Republicans, it seems, are on a collision course with the White House, George Curry, suggesting that this is not the way to go.
This is probably the most divisive issue facing the Republican Party right now. And what's interesting, you had Alan Spector saying, look, let's try to get a compromise here. Let's let these illegal people here, don't let them benefit from the law, but let them work, but let's not move them towards citizenship. And his reward has been that everybody has fired off on him from both the left and from the right. And this, in fact, this is such a divisive issue that people on both sides are saying, look, either we have it my way, or let's not. I'd rather not have one at all if we're going to have the compromise that Arlen Specter has proposed.
We should note, Tara Setmeyer, that Arlen Specter, Republican senator from Pennsylvania, is on the Judiciary Committee and a very well respected, quite frankly, on both sides of the aisle, senator. But one of the things we're seeing is some suggesting that there are people who want it both ways, that you want to allow, because you know the boost in the economy that America receives from these workers, you want to allow them, quote, guest worker status, but you don't want to give them some of the benefits that should come along to those who work full time in this country.
Yeah, this is going to be a very, very serious debate. This is something that's been looming in the wings for a while, and now it's percolating because we have a midterm election coming up, and there are very distinct differences on both sides. The issue with Arlen Specter's proposal, some have questioned whether that's a good idea because you're basically keeping people in indentured servitude to a certain point because they're still not reaping the benefits, or there's no incentive for them to get out of the economic class they're in because they're still sort of stuck there. But there's four main principles here that we need to understand as far as immigration, good, effective immigration reform. And I think that all of the proposals center around these four things. Consent of the governed. Basically, individuals who are not citizens don't have a right to American residency without the consent of the American people through laws. That's what we're doing now. National security. We cannot possibly have a disorganized and chaotic immigration system to continue the way we do now because it compromises our national security. And as far as enforcement, we've been overwhelmed. I mean, there's no the lack of enforcement of our immigration laws has pretty much gotten us to the point we're at today. And we also need to have some type of assimilation aspect to this. We cannot be so protectionist that we don't want to encourage immigrants to come to America, because America is a nation of immigrants. But one, it's a nation that we're Americanized, sharing the benefits and responsibilities of U.S. citizenship. So those should
all
be
right.
The
Walter
goals.
Fields, what Tara suggests there all sounds to a person sitting in the middle, fair game.
Well, I think, you know, we want it both ways. Today's Wall Street Journal has a front page article talking about the construction of upscale shopping malls on the Texas-Mexico border that are booming. So on the one hand, you know, we want the infusion of, you know, capital. But on the other hand, we're having an issue with people coming across the borders. I think one of the real issues that we face today is that the hue of immigrants has changed significantly. And I think this country is not prepared for the influx of people of color as immigrants. This country
you think
is
this
always
is the fear, the backlash of what the media has termed, and we use it perhaps far too much and cliche-ish, the browning of America?
Well, I mean, if you look at where immigration where immigrants are coming from today, they're coming from Mexico. They're coming in many ways from Africa, from the Caribbean. I mean, we have a different wave of immigrants today. And now we seem to have these cries about the problem with people crossing our borders. They've always crossed our borders.
Well, I don't think it's an issue necessarily of the browning of America as much as the issue of an influx of low-skilled workers. And I think that would be the case whether they were black, brown. It doesn't matter. It's the issue of skills.
European immigrants were low-skilled workers
100 years ago, and now the pace of technology today has changed the economic, the marketplace here. So the need for low-skilled workers is diminishing.
We had technology during the era of European immigration. Yeah. It wasn't high technology. It was a technology.
George Curry, while what Tara is suggesting is true, there are still a lot of jobs that we are finding now, quite frankly, that Americans and many of them on the low social economic ladder, being African American, just don't want to do.
Two things about that. Let's get to the crux of the matter. What Americans want is cheap labor that they can exploit, and that's part of it. Now, I think it's a myth, Ed, that people, when they say that the Mexican Americans, for example, are taking jobs that blacks don't want. With our unemployment rate, we still will work, and we still work in these kind of jobs. But people want to exploit this as a group, but African Americans still work, and they still work in a lot of these jobs.
Oh, they're still not clearly working. They're still working a lot of those jobs. But I listen, myth or not, I know a lot of folks. I'm talking cousins, brothers, sisters, friends who don't necessarily want those jobs. The feeling is, look, you know, I've been here long enough. I want to climb above this for whatever reason.
Of course you do. All right. Everybody wants
let me move our attention to what everybody will be paying attention to, most folks, whether we like to admit it or not, and that's the Oscars on Sunday. Got us to thinking about the roles that African Americans have been nominated for and what you should portray or what you portray and then are awarded for. Terrence Howard, a fantastic actor and a great performance in Hustle and Flow, yet and still he portrayed a pimp. We know Denzel won for Training Day. No redeeming factors in that character. There was a controversy of Halle Berry's win and the type of character she portrayed. It goes on and on, whether it's Hattie McDaniel as a maid. There have been some blips on the screen, if you will. Sidney Poitier, of course, and Jamie Foxx's portrayal of Ray, even though some suggested that as fine of a man as Ray Charles was, he was very flawed. How much do you buy, George Curry, that for African Americans to win Oscars, they have to be these flawed characters?
I don't have to buy it. You just look at the winners. Look at what the roles they are rewarded for. And I've written about this, complaining about this in the past, and I don't expect that to change. And I also have to say that I challenge the actors and actresses who accept these demeaning roles, who somehow want to rationalize and saying it's okay, and they allow themselves to be portrayed that way as well when they don't have to.
We should note that Morgan Freeman also won last year for his portrayal of a trainer in Million Dollar Baby. One of the other controversies coming up right now, Walter Fields, is the song that's been nominated. It's Hard Out There for a Pimp. Again, a song from Hustle and Flow. The Academy wanted Terrence Howard, who performed it in the movie, to perform it on stage. That is a change. It used to be that those who performed the songs, whether they were actors or musicians, never performed them on the Academy Awards. But of late, that has changed. The rumor is that Terrence was talked out of it and certainly may have had trepidation up front about performing this on stage without being in character. He is not doing so. What's your thought here?
Well, you know, imagery is so important. And I want to go to a point that George made, because I think this is where Black Hollywood really has got to start speaking up. You know, we've had these constant portrayals that are extremely negative. And we can even look at the case of Denzel Washington, who's considered to be one of our finest actors today. The fact of the matter is that anyone who saw his performance in Malcolm X would have said that was the performance that Denzel should have won an Academy Award. Then he portrays a rogue cop. You know, just the fact that you're playing a police officer, and we've had a history with law enforcement. We talked about it, you know, early. Part of this is this notion that Hollywood, the images that are transmitted, have great social meaning. And I think we've got to be real careful here that we don't endorse something that comes back to haunt us at the end of the day.
Though, Tara, should I, as Denzel Washington, not accept that role or that Oscar for Training Day? It's not my fault that the Academy didn't vote for me for Malcolm X or Hurricane or any of the other grand roles that I've played.
Well, I think we're actually going to all agree today on this subject. No, I mean, it's the actor's prerogative to accept whatever role he or she chooses, except that they need to understand that exactly what Walter said, there are social implications that far outweigh just the role at that time. Movies have had such a prolific impact on social views, social movements, our attitudes toward things, and I think it is unfortunate that the roles that some of our finest black actors have been nominated and won for have been negative. I think it's a disgrace that it's that song "It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp" is being nominated for an Academy Award. I mean, it just further perpetuates the negative images and the ghetto mentality that a lot of white America thinks that black Americans accept and are privy to. And I think that's unfortunate.
George, with less than a minute to go, isn't the reality, though, that you should probably be able to portray and take whatever role you want? But maybe we put too much credence, and I'm talking about black America, too, in the Oscars.
Well, not so much that is, as I think is, you know, it wouldn't be the same kind of scrutiny if you had an assortment of roles. I don't think anybody would say you shouldn't and can't play those roles. If you had you are depicted as you are in your totality,
absolutely,
that's not the case. And if you're only depicted in these roles, for the most part, And that's still absolutely true of Hollywood. That's why people are so concerned. If we had all the roles all the time, nobody would even raise a whisper. But that's
we should note, in terms of full disclosure for my friend Mr. Washington, he has had a breadth of roles in Hollywood from good to bad. And
yes.
One coming up very
he
soon.
He could have skipped the bad one, though.
All right. Walter Fields,
no
Tara Settmeyer, and George Curry. Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.